Hey y'all, I'm Carrie.
Hey y'all, I'm Mandy.
And this is Monstrous. This episode contains topics and language that may not be suitable for all listeners and may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised. Are you ready?
Yeah, I actually am this time.
Okay, so this one is a little bit shorter than normal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just a little something to get everybody to the 14th because we do not have an episode coming out next week.
Yeah, we're taking a break.
Yep. Before we jump in, I have a couple things from the current true crime world that came out this week. I told you I was going to tell you about. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, the first one has people divided. I don't know if you've heard about it because it's been every fucking where. We're going to talk about Brian Koberger.
I don't think so.
Okay, you'll know who it is once I tell you. You'll recognize him. So for those along with Mandy that does not recognize the name, Brian Koberger is the 30-year-old man who fatally stabbed the four University of Idaho students in 2022.
Okay.
Yep. So on June 30th, so this past Monday, he accepted a plea deal only 6 weeks before his trial was set to begin on August 8th. Which I was surprised that they offered him a plea. I didn't think they were going to.
Did they not have enough evidence or something?
Oh, no, they totally do. Totally do. I don't know why they offered a last-minute plea deal. Because he was set to go to trial. Jury selection was supposed to start, I believe, on August 4th.
Maybe his lawyer knew he didn't stand a chance.
Maybe. I don't know. Why the state offered it to him, but I think it's stupid. I don't think he should have got a plea deal. But so this was a death penalty case. This deal takes the death penalty off the table.
That's why.
Which originally, right, his attorney tried to get the death penalty taken off the table from the very beginning. She told, which this judge in this case has been a hard ball. Like, he is not played with the defense at all. Yeah, we need more judges like this. So she tried to get the death penalty taken off the table, saying that the state could not get the serum in order to execute, right? Because he would be, I believe, the eighth person on Idaho's death row. I believe the eighth. But the judge is like, yeah, we can. And there's also other methods for the death penalty.
Right.
Because Idaho is one of the few states that still has the firing squad.
I was going to say, don't they have the firing squad?
Yeah.
Well, let me be on it.
That was my mom, y'all.
So he's like, yeah, we can get the serum.
I'm going to beat that child down for random bells.
And there are also other ways.
Right.
In this state. So he's like, no, this is a death penalty case. Then, before the plea happened, so before they set the trial date, she tried to get it extended again, saying that she didn't have enough time to prepare. She wasn't ready to go to trial. The judge is like, no. You have had plenty of time to get ready for this trial. Instead of looking at the discovery and preparing for that, you spent all this time in interviewing his fourth grade teacher, people he went to church with.
Oh, God.
People that are no longer involved in his life. Like, you spent all of this time doing that when you should have been looking at the discovery. You are not getting any more time.
Damn.
Yeah. That is not verbatim. Not
right.
Word for word, obviously. But that's what it was. You're not getting any more time. Because that's what she did. She spent so much fucking time interviewing these people that knew him as a child that she didn't look at the discovery and prepare to rebut what the state had.
Right.
Yeah. The judge is not playing. So, are you ready to be pissed and appalled all at the same time about this?
Oh, God.
The families of the four victims were notified of this deal through an email with a letter attached.
That's fucked up.
Yep. The deal, they said, was unexpected. They were furious at the state of Ohio and they felt that the state had failed them.
Where they have all right to feel that way. I would.
Right, exactly. The statements were made because according to the Goncalves family, I think that's how you say their name, the state in this case with, quote, a secretive deal and a hurried effort to close the case without any input from the victims' families on the plea details. They had no idea this plea was being offered. They had no say in it. Nothing. The state did it, offered it, it was accepted, and then they sent and told the families.
That's
in an email.
That's shitty as hell.
Yeah. So like I said, this was a death penalty case. I remain on the fence when it comes to death penalty, but if Brian Koberger is not the exact person that the death penalty was created for, then who the fuck is? Because, anyway, in my opinion, he should not go to prison. I fully think that he should be sent to death row, and he should be executed for what he did. He should not get to enjoy a nice, cozy cot, 3 hot fucking meals a day, paid for by the taxpayers. But that's just my opinion. Not everyone is going to agree with that. This obviously would not be happening. In exchange for his guilty plea, Koberger will not be getting death row. Instead, he will be sent to prison for 4 consecutive life sentences. For 4 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole, and he has to waive his rights to any appeals.
Well, one thing about it, you know, the motherfucker ain't gonna walk the face of the...
No, he'll never get out.
No, but that's still fucking shitty.
Exactly.
That does not do their family justice.
He is older now than any of his four victims will ever be.
That's sad.
Why does he get to go live in a prison with a nice, cozy meal he's taken care of?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they don't get to live the rest of their lives.
That's bullshit.
Yeah. So he entered and accepted this plea on July 2nd, and the sentencing is scheduled for July 23rd. So we'll keep an eye on that. Once those sentencing details come out, I'll let everybody know. Then we have the Sean Combs, better known as P. Diddy trial.
It's such fucking bullshit.
So they came back with a verdict after 13 hours of deliberation.
That's such bullshit. I was at work when I heard it.
So,
bullshit what?
I think this is the one that you and I are going to disagree on.
You think so?
I think so. So Diddy was charged with 5 separate charges.
Right.
Which included sex trafficking and the RICO charge of racketeering.
But they were trying to charge him with 6, but they only got him on 5.
So they charged him with 2 counts of sex trafficking.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they only took him to trial for 5. But it was 2 counts of sex trafficking. Both of these charges would have automatically given him life. He was found not guilty for 4 of those counts. And found guilty of transportation to engage in prostitution. He was then denied bail and remains behind bars until sentencing, which is not expected to happen until October 3rd, but the defense has requested a sooner date. So it could happen before then. But as of right now, October 3rd. Do not feel, my opinion, that there was enough to prove sex trafficking. Because he provided the transportation for prostitutes, right? Or sex workers, whichever. I'm not sure what the correct lingo is nowadays. But they were already in that line of work. He was not forcing them into that line of work. And that's what sex trafficking is.
Right.
So I don't feel that there was enough to prove that he was sex trafficking anyone.
He was found guilty on transportation.
Right. There's a lot of people mad that he was found not guilty for sex trafficking. Because they had 2 charges of that, 1 for Cassie and just 1 for sex trafficking in general.
Mm-hmm.
But he's definitely guilty.
He is definitely a creepo.
Oh, yeah.
He was... How do you say it? I don't know how to word this where it don't sound bad or we don't get fucked up comments from it. He had some very different kinks.
Oh, yeah. Like all the baby oil stuff.
They found 800 and some different types of dildos and vibrators, which everybody each to your own.
Right, exactly.
I don't care what you're involved in.
Hey.
All I'm saying is...
That's a lot for one person.
He was involved in some shit. Like, that's a lot of vibrators and dildos to have. Like, just saying. Like, those were some wild-ass parties. And he needs to be a spokesperson for baby oil.
Right?
Just saying. Like, he...
Get him that contract right now. He, Johnson & Johnson.
He put their stocks up very fucking high. It's all I'm saying. Fuck. Like...
He used that instead of lube because it was just way cheaper.
Oh, yeah. You might not have as bad of a reaction to it. I don't know. Like, don't know from experience, y'all. I don't know.
Just saying. It's cheaper. It's like a dollar something for a bottle of baby oil.
A big bottle that lasts you a long time.
Right. Well, maybe not with him. I don't know.
Yeah, that is true because he had a lot.
He very much is an abuser. He very much did many things, and I'm sure there's things that the state doesn't know about that he did. And there were things that he was caught with that they didn't charge him for. There were drugs, guns, all of that he was not charged for. So he very much is a criminal. I just think it's R. Kelly all over again.
Oh, most definitely.
I think for us, it's harder than like teenagers and young adults today because we grew up with P. Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
So the P. Diddy here. Is
not who
not,
we grew up with.
Exactly. So I think it's harder for us. Same with R. Kelly. Until his trial, it was really hard to see him in that light.
Mm-hmm.
Because we grew up with him. That's not who we seen in music videos and on TV and all that other stuff.
Not who they portrayed themselves as.
Exactly. So I think that might be more kind of what the issue is. It's hard to, you know what I mean? And then because it wasn't televised. It was just reported. So I think that really makes it even harder. He deserves to be in prison. I feel that there were more charges that they could have given him that they did not give him. He's definitely not going to get the amount of time that he should have.
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah. So the hip-hop mogul is now a convicted felon. Okay. In this jurisdiction, this means he faces a maximum of 10 years.
That's fucked.
Yeah. Yep. I do not think.
And then he'll get time served too, I guarantee you.
Yep, which I'm going to get there.
Say that.
I do not think it's enough time at all with how big he is, how much he's been able to get away with. I don't think it's going to teach him anything.
Mm-mm.
Not at all. He's been in custody since September of last year. He will get close to a year of time served.
Mm-hmm.
In this jurisdiction, there's no minimum sentence. So if the judge wanted to, the judge could sentence him to a year and he's done. Because there's no minimum sentence. With his time served, he could remain behind bars for the next 9 years. Unless he's given parole sooner. That's it.
That's fucked.
Yep. Despite everyone's own personal opinion, I do not think that is enough time.
Mm-mm.
He shouldn't be behind bars longer. But because the maximum is 10 years, that's all the judge can give him.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on that one when I have the sentencing date for sure. Because like I said, it's supposed to be October. Could change. And what the sentence is. We'll update everyone. So now the last one is currently happening. And it comes from right here in Iowa. I don't know if you've heard this one. Because the trial just started. So Wednesday, June 2nd, Karina Cooper's trial for the murder of her husband began in Linn County.
I don't think I've heard that one.
So to give a quick recap, Ryan Cooper was found dead in the early morning hours of June 18th, 2021, inside his home. He had died from 2 gunshots to the face. The case went cold for a bit, but it picked back up, which led to the arrest of Ryan's wife, Karina Cooper, and Houston Danker. Both were charged with first-degree murder. So day one of the trial, which was Wednesday, they had opening statements. Obviously, they played 2 911 calls. The prosecution's stance is that Cooper was having an affair with Houston Danker, and both planned to kill Ryan together. This was backed up by Snapchat messages where including one where Danker told Cooper to collect the bullet casings, which I will tell you exactly what that message said in just a minute. But she had missed one. That's how they were able to tie it all back together. It just took them some time. They plan to kill Ryan for none other than life insurance money in the amount of $500,000.
Wow.
But what Karina did not know is that life insurance money was to be split between their children.
Oh, shit.
It wasn't even supposed to go to her. Yeah. So they said that there were a lot of inconsistencies in Cooper's account of the events that day. So, for example, her health app data from her phone showed that she took 170 steps inside the home from 4:23 to 4:33 a.m. Then an hour later, the 911 caller, who was Houston Danker, had texted Karina, quote, "I'm going to get this shit done." And she replied, "Go." Which I will get into those messages in just a minute. The defense attorney said that Cooper was innocent and that Danker had planned the murder, killed Ryan Cooper all on his own, saying that Danker was a manipulative, quote, lover who pulled Cooper into a fantasy world of starting a new family. She stated Cooper never wanted her husband dead and never wanted the insurance money, which is currently in the trust for their children. Bitch, bye.
Right.
Two sheriff deputies had testified. The jury heard the 911 calls. They were also shown the body cam footage, which showed Cooper sitting on her now dead husband's lap when officers arrived.
The fuck?
Yep. Before calling 911, Cooper had called Ryan's older brother, Aaron. And he took to the stand where he stated that he got in his car and called 911 as he was pulling out of his own driveway to head to his brother's, only a few minutes away, to try to help. His brother was a volunteer firefighter. He said that when he arrived, he found Cooper sitting on top of Ryan's now blood-soaked body on the recliner, screaming hysterically with her face pressed against his and not attempting CPR. Yeah. He further said that Cooper had called him about 2 weeks after his brother's murder, after seeing a news report about a shell casing being found, and asked him what a shell casing was. He found this odd because she had been around hunters, so she knew what guns, ammunition, all of that was.
Yeah.
Ryan and Cooper's son, who is now 15 years old, also testified and said that he normally slept on the couch next to his dad's recliner. But he was not down there that night because his mother, Karina Cooper, had asked him to stop sleeping downstairs just a few days before the murder.
It's a dead giveaway.
Right. Day two, which was July 3rd, the state's case continued, of course. They had a criminalist with the Iowa Crime Lab testify. He testified to what he saw in the house, the layout of the home, how there was no forced entry into the house. He testified to seeing footprints in blood and blood stains. There also appeared to have been blood that went from inside the house to outside of it from the bottom of someone's shoe. They then had a digital forensic investigator that testified to the digital forensics in the case, which included both Cooper and Houston Danker's iPhones. These, of course, they had to get search warrants for and all of that in order for Apple to release access to the things that had been deleted. Because, guys, just because you delete it, it's still there.
Right.
But the stuff that was still currently on the phone, not deleted, they were able to get access just by unlocking it. This included text messages, Snapchat messages, health app data, screenshots, and search history, which included searches about guns, bullets, types of projectiles, and other similar searches. She testified that based on text she recovered, there was clearly a sexual relationship between Cooper and Danker. It was very obvious. These included messages of Danker saying, "I love you," kids being treated like shit, Cooper saying, "fucking hate him," and others similar, talking about what things they would like to do together, them traveling, stuff like that. She then testified to the Snapchat messages. And these, again, guys, just because it is encrypted or deleted does not mean that it is gone. It is still there. So in the messages, she refers to Danker as her son's daddy and Ryan as the boys' sperm donor.
Damn.
Yeah. There were some sexual messages sent to Danker. And then another sent by Cooper saying, quote, "Here's hoping for a rogue semi today. Big accident, no survivors." Mm-hmm. Karina had had her tubes tied at some point, and so therefore she could not have any more kids. But the two went on to talk about if the reversal, those aren't the words, she used surgery, but that's what she's talking about, doesn't work, she could still do IVF, so they may be pregnant sometime in the following year.
Damn.
It's gross. Your husband is working. He's providing for your family. And you're talking about having a tubal reversal surgery and IVF to have a baby with the man you're having an affair with. Gross. Okay, so moving on. Cooper then goes on to talk shit about her husband. Then she talks shit to Danker. Like, this bitch is all over the fuck place. But then the day before the murder, the two were Snapchatting each other. Cooper kept referring to herself as Danker's wife. Bitch, you're still married to somebody else. You're not his wife.
Right.
Fuck out of here. Then on June 18th, there were Snapchat messages that began at 3:31 a.m. There were a couple menial messages back and forth. Danker snapped Cooper saying, quote, more than anything, okay, babe, phone's going down. Send me something after I leave your house to then wait for me to open it. Deal. To which Cooper replied, deal. Following these, Danker told her, quote, remember those casings. Fucking remember those casings. No ifs, ands, or buts. Karina responded, absolutely, 100%. They then sent a few more menial messages, and the last one Cooper sent to Danker simply said, go. And at 3:32 a.m., which was an hour, no, what the fuck? 4:32 a.m., I'm sorry. Then at 4:32 a.m., an hour later, Danker replied, yep, just woke up. So those are the two big Snapchat messages that, like, they really honed in on. There were more than 2,400 Snapchat messages that this lady looked at.
Holy shit.
And these messages led all the way up to the night that, or the morning that Ryan was killed.
That's yep. fucked up.
Yep. They then had a special agent from the Iowa DCI. He testified to his interviews that he had conducted with Cooper. Ask normal questions, you know, that happen. They also played portions of her recorded interview. Base someone's guilt on how they appear, okay? The lack of emotion or whatever. But to me, it appears as though she's acting. It does not look, now the camera is like up in the corner, so you, it's not like a close-up on her face, but it doesn't appear that she's like clearly crying. Like she has her face like this. So you can't really see her face. Her hand on her face. Sorry, you guys can't see me. it sounds as though like she's trying to make it sound like she's crying. Like she's breathing heavy and stuff like that. But it doesn't appear to be genuine. Yeah. And then she's able to calm herself down rather quickly.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't, I think it was fake, but we all respond to trauma and, you know, all of that shit.
Differently.
So if you want to see it for yourself, you can go to Court TV. It's day two of the Karina Cooper trial. The video, it's minute marker, 6 hours, 16 minutes, and 32 seconds. So go check that out. Determine for yourself. This guy testified that there was no visible forced entry, no valuables were missing, the fact that the family had a protective dog, which was a Rottweiler, by the way, ruled out any kind of a break-in. The next day, they showed part of that interview clip. She's confronted about the suspicion that she killed her husband or was at least involved. She, of course, denied it, saying that is ridiculous. She then made comments about Danker, saying being some kid, and then comments about how, you know, Ryan sleeping on the couch in the living room. Or that they didn't, you know, get along sometimes. Why would that be a reason for her to kill him? That's an odd way to respond to being accused of killing your husband. But that's just me. there was, of course, some cross-examination. Some of the witnesses, but not all. I didn't really go into that because the defense will have their own time to lay out their case. So we'll hold off on that. So following this testimony of the special agent, court ended for the day. And they'll be back on Monday, 9 a.m. Central Time. If anyone wants to check that out on live TV, because it's being broadcasted live. The trial is expected to last 10 days, but with the holiday, it could push it longer. Houston Denker's trial for first-degree murder is set to follow next month. So far, the defense does not seem to have much of a plan. Like, it is only day two. There's still a lot to come. It just doesn't really look good for them at this moment. So we'll keep an eye on that trial, update everyone with what's going on so far, all that on the 14th when we come back. So that's all I have for the big true crime cases out there. So,
okay.
Now that all of the current true crime stuff is out of the way,
mm-hmm.
Are you ready to get into it?
Yes.
Okay. They're doing sparklers and stuff outside, so you're probably going to hear that. Sorry, guys. So after our case Monday, I thought we could use a little palate cleanser. So I moved my planned cases around a little bit. So instead of it, the heavy one that I was going to do,
mm-hmm.
We're going to do a lighthearted one. And I think you're going to love it.
Well, I've been waiting to hear about it.
Okay. So are you ready to get into the greatest story ever?
Yes.
Okay. So
you're going to learn a lot
in this one because I did. And we are heading to Australia in the 1930s for this one.
I've always wanted to go to Australia, but they got too many things that can kill you there. So I'm not going.
We have things that can kill you here.
Yeah, but they got like really big spiders and like weird shit that can kill you in Australia. I'm good. No.
Oh, God.
But I do want to fight a kangaroo.
My money's on you.
Shit, I don't know about that.
Kangaroos are ruthless.
Okay, our Australian listeners can tell us about that.
Yeah.
Yep. Tell us all about the kangaroos.
Yeah, please do. Because I'm curious.
Okay, so the time that we're talking about right now, the government in Australia had a major deficit. And the situation was pretty bleak by October of 1932. So in the years wheat was ready to be harvested, farmers near the town of, I'm going to say this wrong, I'm sorry, Campaign and Wallagalin, they had a major issue. This area is one of the drier parts of Australia, so it already wasn't the best place to farm. But then, right before they were meant to harvest, they had to face a plague that had overtaken their farms and wreaked havoc. This plague tramples and devours the crops. They are a nuisance of epic proportions. This is the story of the Great Emu War.
Like, emu, like, isn't that what that thing on Star Wars is called?
I have no
Not
idea.
Chewbacca.
I don't watch...
But that little thing.
I don't watch Star Wars. So I don't have a clue.
Oh, no, I can picture it in my head. Never mind. Go on.
Here, I'll show you. I'll show you an Eva. But I don't watch Star Wars, so I couldn't tell you what it is.
Either.
I have no idea what you're talking
about. But I've seen clip. You know what?
I know Chewbacca.
It's not Chewbacca. He's a little wee guy. And he's furry. Is that Star Wars?
I think that's supposed to be like a Labubu.
Oh, is it?
I think. I could be wrong. Because I'm not sure, but I think it's supposed to be like mirrored after a Labubu.
You could be right.
I'm not really 100% sure. I could just be talking out of my ass right now.
I don't know. I don't even like Star Wars, but that's what reminded. Okay, never mind. I'm sorry.
I have to ask my Uncle Brandon to tell you because he catches it.
Let me know.
Okay, that's an emu.
Ooh, the things that look like ostriches.
Yes, they look like ostriches. They're often confused for ostriches.
They look like the evil version of one.
Pretty much.
When I say an emu, like watch Liberty Insurance.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. That's an email.
Okay,
yep, I forgot that's an email. Okay, so we're in the aftermath of World War I, and thousands of soldiers who are given the nickname Soldier Settlers had moved to Western Australia. So Australia is large, and then Western Australia is a vast area and has a huge array of climates. There's the tropical coast up north. On the southwestern coast, there is the Mediterranean climate that is similar to parts of California. Then on the interior between the two, it's like a desert. So Australia literally has somewhere to live for everybody.
That's kind of cool.
It kind of is to live in one spot. But I'm sure that they're probably far away from
Oh yeah.
each other, I would think. So inside this vast land, the Australian government bought thousands of acres to sell to these soldiers that were returning from war at a discounted price in an effort to reward them for their service. They'll use you some shitty desert land. Thank you for your service. There were more than 5,000 soldiers that bought land under this.
Oh, wow.
But the problem here is that the amount of land for farming in Western Australia that has good soil, which you need in order to successfully farm, is low. So most of the soldiers that bought this land ended up on pieces that had low quality soil, along with other issues that the government didn't really think about. So in the end, most of the soldiers ended up raising sheep. And then they just planted wheat because in the climate that they were in, this was honestly just the best choice. In the 1920s, there was a string of good years for them. The wheat grew well. The farmers were able to save themselves from a few bad years by selling the wool from their sheep. So whenever the wheat wouldn't grow, they just sold the wool from their sheep and they were good. Everyone's making money. Everything's, you know, great, happy, hunky-dory. But then the Depression hit in 1929. At first, when it started, the price of wheat stayed pretty stable for the most part, even though other prices had tanked. So the Australian Prime Minister had promised the farmers that the government would buy their wheat at good prices as a way, you know, to help them produce more and all that since it was selling so well. The farmers, of course, took him up on this offer and they each expanded their wheat production. But by the early 30s, there was a new Prime Minister, Joseph Lyons. And with his new prime ministership, the wheat prices tanked. Despite the drop in wheat prices, the government says that they'll keep the promise from the previous prime minister, which you should.
Right.
Okay, so with this new guy in place and the wheat prices tanking, the situation is pretty bleak by October of 1932. These men, like I said, had gotten this wheat to grow aside from the bad soil, but when the emus showed up, they proved to be a pest. So I'm going to give you some little educational background here.
Fun fact.
Emus are native to Australia. They are the world's second tallest bird following the ostrich. So this one you're not going to believe. Emus are considered to be one of the closest relatives to dinosaurs.
Really?
Yep. Specifically to raptors.
Oh, because of that long neck and the short wings? Well, that makes sense.
Like genetically, they are the closest relative to dinosaurs.
So wouldn't that make an ostrich too?
I don't know. I didn't look into that, but I would think so.
An ostrich's wings are bigger.
Mm. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So emus are the only bird species with calf muscles.
I just pictured the tiniest little calf muscles in my head.
An emu going.
I know it. Hey.
I cannot get through this.
So because of this, they are able to jump up to 7 feet high.
Holy shit.
And run or sprint for short distances as fast as 40 miles an hour.
Damn.
That's a fucking car.
Yeah. Could you imagine driving and seeing one of those running right next to you?
And you turn his head and go,
Emus have a pouch inside their throats that they use to communicate, which they use to make grunting and like those deep booming sounds that emus make. So they don't have like voice boxes. It's just a pouch inside their throat. So emus are commonly known to be aggressive and bipolar, as you would say, but this isn't always true. So this happens if they aren't socialized properly, but if you get them as a young age, emus can be trained and can actually be gentle and loving.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Emus are flightless birds, but they do have wings. They're just too small to hold their body weight to fly. Mm. They tend to migrate long distances in search of food and water. And throughout history, these emus came through this exact area that we're talking about today, but they never stayed for long for obvious reasons. They just kind of like passed through on their way to the coast. But in 1932, there was a major drought. And because of the creation of this farmland and the man-made water supply, that changed. Now, typically, you'll find emus either alone or in pairs of two. But when they migrate, they do so in large groups. Do you want to know what these groups are called?
What?
Either a flock or a mob.
A mob?
Yeah, which is a mob of emus.
You mean a flash mob of emus?
The emu mob. So how many emus do you think traveled through this area during the time that we're talking about? Like, all together?
I don't know.
How much do you think would classify as a mob of emus?
10 or 12.
20,000 emus traveled through this little area all at once.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I knew that answer.
Could you imagine seeing 20,000 emus?
Fucking insane, dude.
So our case...
showing off those sex cats.
I was going to say, that's a lot of cat muscles.
So on our case today, 20,000 emu are eating, stomping, trampling, drinking the irrigated water, and just kind of hanging out. And they're wreaking havoc all through the wheat fields, as you can imagine. So now remember, it's 1932, so it's post-war and during the Depression. So tariffs are high, and chicken wire, also known as wire netting, was really expensive. And because these birds can jump over 7 feet high, you would need a lot of this. The cost of the fence to cut off these wheat fields would be crazy expensive, and it just wasn't something that the farmers could afford to do. So at some point, the farmers are like, oh, wait, duh, we're World War I veterans. So they decide to write to the Minister of Defense asking for machine guns to kill these 20,000 emus, as one does.
Shit.
Oh, it gets better.
Oh, my God.
Like, let's not just, you know, kind of shoo them off. We're just going to kill them. Get rid of them. So the government, knowing that they've, like, jerked these farmers around several times, and they want to change how these men look at them, the Prime Minister of Defense says, okay, sounds great. Approves the request for machine guns.
Oh, damn.
I don't really know why they thought this would work. Because emus are not small animals. As babies, they're about 5 inches tall, so they're tiny. But fully grown, they stand at around 6 feet tall. They can jump 7 feet high and run as fast as 40 miles an hour.
I just pictured a bunch of people out there with machine guns chasing these birds.
Like, these are some giant, fast-ass birds. I don't know how a machine gun is the best choice here.
They're like bobbing and weaving the bullets, right? And shit.
Like, who am I to judge? So instead of telling them to use their regular guns that they already had, the government sent 3 specially trained soldiers from Perth to this area to operate the 3 machine guns they sent. So they're like, okay, not all of you are going to get a machine gun. All right. We'll send you 3. You don't get to operate them. We'll send you the guys to operate them. Okay, there we go. Sorry, I lost my place. And they didn't send, like, little tiny machine guns. They sent the ones from, like, World War I that you had to, like, prop up.
The big boy guns.
Yes, like, legit machine guns. So now the farmers were allowed to help in the emu assassination, but they had to use regular rifles. Which I'm not sure how a regular rifle works, but whatever. The farmers agree to house the military specialists and also pay for the ammunition for the gun. So it's not really the best deal for them. But they felt it was the only way to get rid of their issue. So they agreed. So the military specialists who are in the Army branch are overseen by Major Gwinnett Purvis Wynn Aubrey Meredith.
That was all one name?
Yes, that's the guy's whole name. It's one person.
Shit.
I know. And they are joined by a cinematographer to film the anti-emu offense. That's what they called it. Yep. The Australian government fully believed that this would get rid of the 20,000 emu that have decided to just live here on this farmland. So they're like, let's capture this shit on camera because it's going to be great propaganda for what we do for our farmers. So these soldiers arrive on November 2nd of 1932. The day of their arrival, a mob of 50 emus are spotted at one of the farms. So they set up their machine guns and on some high ground nearby, and the gun jams almost as soon as they fire it. So the emus scatter. The next day, they have a little bit more success when they set up ambushes around water, and it proves to be very slow. Between the rifles and the machine guns, they're able to pick off about 12 of the 20,000 emu before the mobs scatter out of range. It's clear that the farmers and the military really underestimated these emus. So these soldiers at this point are getting pretty nervous because they had been instructed by one of their commanding officers to bring back at least 100 emu skins because emu feathers were used to decorate the ceremonial helmets of a certain military unit there in Australia. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's become obvious that bringing back 100 emu skins were going to be a lot harder than they thought it would be. Because at this point, the emu had started to appoint their own scouts for the flock. These emus, they're like, yeah.
These are smart.
Oh, yeah, they are. They're like, these guys are going to hurt us, so we need a plan. Let's strategize. Set some of us up out there to watch those guys on the hill. Okay, because they're trying to kill us. One emu work correspondent, that's what they call them, wrote that at the time, quote, the emus have proved that they are not so stupid as they are usually considered to be. Because if you go and watch videos of emus, they're just kind of running around, staring off in space, pecking at the ground, and they look like idiots. But they're really smarter than we realize they are. In fact, scientists have found that emus, although not smarter than crows, they are smarter than turkeys, because turkeys are dumb as shit.
Mm-hmm.
They are innovative and have clear problem-solving abilities, such as being able to align a hole within a food chamber in a rotating wheel experiment. So they're able to figure it out to get the food out of it.
Right.
They have the ability to learn and to be trained, and they are good at adapting to their environments. So they look goofy as hell, but they are not dumb. Looks can be deceiving.
Right.
So that same correspondent that I just told you about further wrote that each mother had its leader, which was always an enormous black plumed bird standing at 6 feet high who kept watch while his fellow birds busied themselves with the wheat. At the first sign of any suspicion, he gave a signal and then dozens of emu heads stretched out of the crops. After this, a few birds would take off, starting a stampede. The leader would always stay in his place until the rest of his flock were safe.
They are smart.
Kind of like a buck does.
Yeah.
Oh, deer. Yep. Now, after a week into this thing, it's reported that the group had used 2,500 rounds of ammunition to kill only 300 emus.
Oh, shit.
Then after another week of this cat and mouse game, the emus seemed to learn the range that the machine guns have. So they're like, oh, okay, you can't hit me from this far away. So they would set up in the wheat fields just out of range of the guns. And then every time the soldiers would reposition themselves closer, the emus would move farther back, keeping that distance between them. And then if the farmers got their rifles, the emus would scatter. So now when they scattered, they're trampling more wheat than they would have if the farmers would have just left them alone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, after the most successful day of this so far, they were able to kill around 24 emus. And one of the military specialists goes on to examine the dead body. When he finds it, it has 5 bullets in its body, some which are very clearly old because they had begun to heal. Which means that the emus are being hit with the bullets, but they're staying alive and running around at full speed after they've been shot multiple times.
Oh, that's crazy as hell.
After realizing this, it seemed more and more like the emus were going to win. And this would prove to be true when exactly 2 months after this whole thing started, the war was suddenly called off on December 2nd. The soldiers would go on to claim that they killed between 1 and 2,000 of the 20,000 emus. So like 10% of the mob. And the farmers, the emus just kind of became a part of life. But for new soldier settlers that were coming in, they were like, no, these motherfuckers are a nuisance. We need to get rid of them. And they would request machine guns every time to fight them off. But after what happened the first time around, they weren't doing this. And the Australian Ministry of Defense denied every single one of them. They're like, we'd already been through this. It ain't gonna work. So instead, they were given additional rifles. And they ended up being more successful at fighting off the emus than the soldiers had been with the machine guns.
That's crazy as hell.
Then in 1934, there was a bounty system put in place to try to control the emu population. This system gave a bounty for each emu beak brought in. I could not find how much the bounty was, though. So based on historical accounts, there were more than 50,000 bounties claimed in just 6 months. In total, so the war and the bounty system, there was around 200,000 emus killed during this whole thing.
Damn.
Yeah. This system, of course, received a lot of criticism, and it was eventually phased out, and it was replaced with a much more practical response. Fences. So in the end, they ended up putting up fences anyway. Then in 1999, the emu became a protected species in Australia. Today, are you ready? Today, there are between 630,000 and 725,000 emus in the wild, and thousands more in captivity.
Holy shit.
Which they're often seen in like zoos, yeah, things like that. Emus are still a protected species today, but their population is strong and they are not at risk of becoming endangered or extinct. And that's the story of the Great Emu War.
That's wild.
Isn't that just one of the greatest stories you've ever heard?
Yeah, that's crazy. Birds outsmarted humans.
Men battling out with some birds for some land. Right. Greatest thing ever.
That was a cute one.
Yeah, I thought it was a good one. I thought it was a good palate cleanser between last week and the next.
Yeah. That was funny.
Yep.
They got outsmarted by a bunch of birds.
Yep.
That would be embarrassing.
Some goofy ass looking birds at that.
I would not tell anybody that shit, that I was part of that.
Me neither.
No, my family wasn't part of that. I don't know.
I thought it was a funny story. Thought it was good between two cases.
How did you even find that?
I don't remember. I was just Googling stuff and I came across it. I found it a while back ago. It's been on my list for a while. So I came across it. I was Googling something and it came up and I thought it was the funniest thing ever.
Went down a rabbit hole.
Yep. It was great. There might be more details out there. Our Australian listeners might know more about it.
Yeah.
We don't learn about this here in the U.S. So if you know more about it over there in Australia, let us know.
Yeah, that'd be cool to learn more about it.
Yeah, it was the greatest thing ever.
I wonder how much the bounty was.
I know. I couldn't find it anywhere. I looked and looked and looked, and everywhere I said that it was an undisclosed amount. Yeah, so I have no idea. I got this picture. Let me show you.
Where is it?
So here's... I'll put all these on the Facebook page. I only have a couple of them. But there's one of the... Isn't that so funny? It was like in the paper and everything.
Oh, they are ugly.
I know. And then... just out in the wheat field.
Damn.
It's great.
Crazy.
I thought it was the greatest thing ever. Because our next episode that we're going to start on the 15th is heavy.
Is it a rough one?
Yeah, it's two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one that I've been telling you about that I won't tell you what it is.
Oh, finally.
Yep.
Okay.
That you're like, just tell me.
Yeah.
Yep, and I won't tell you.
No.
You'll be happy about it.
I'll be happy that you tell me, or I'll be happy to hear it.
Both.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. That's all I got. You got anything else?
No. Still baffled.
I know. It was crazy. Man against bird, and man lost.
Says a lot about the human race.
Right. I feel like if it was today, I feel like the emus would lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
Most definitely.
I feel like this is very much the 30s, though.
Mm-hmm.
They're just like, let's just a machine gun solve the problem.
Right. Yeah. No, my guy. Negative ghostwriter.
Okay. That's all we got. We need to go out and
do fireworks with the kiddos.
Yep. Before they come in here freaking out again. All right. So we'll be back on the 14th for that two-parter episode. As always, you can find the few photos that I have for this episode on Facebook. The link is in the episode description. Give us a rate, review. Make sure you subscribe so you get those notifications when something new drops. We hope you keep listening and remember to
watch for monsters
and don't kill people. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.
Go fight a kangaroo.
Yes.
Stay away from emus.
Yes. I need a video of fighting a kangaroo, though.
Yep, stay away from emus with their little tiny baby calves.
Yeah. And their little pouches in their throat.
Yeah.